Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Bobby Belt Film Room Breakdown and Preview every Friday at 7:20 as we go commercial-free in the expressway with the Junk Drawer and one of our two final Cowboy Fan Hang giveaways. And next week, we're giving away a suite for Micah's return, Cowboys, Packers, maybe the best giveaway we've ever had here on the station. And the show. We'll officially pick the game at 8 o'clock this morning. Sean Shreve, RJ Choppy with you. Over to Roberto for the preview.
All right, before we jump into film itself, I'm curious from you guys, your general thoughts of who the Chicago Bears are before we head into this. Do you have any opinions? We all saw game one against Minnesota. Impressions of like, oh man, this is a game that concerns me right off the bat before I tell you if it's actually concerning or not.
The Chicago Bears are boring.
Boring.
Yeah, the whole franchise, everything about them is boring. Like, they're not boring on the field necessarily because they got Caleb and Ben Johnson.
Isn't that kind of the definition?
Yeah, but the whole franchise, it's like they're schedule fillers.
Yeah, I agree overall. I hate watching them.
Yeah.
I don't like their uniforms. I hate their style.
C. I hate their C.
You do?
Yeah. Ooh, I do kind of like the C on the helmet.
It's just too used, right? It's like the Reds use it and
you know,
they use it.
Speaking of who they are, and I talked about last hour how surprised I was over the amount of Bears coverage this week everywhere. Maybe it's because it's, you know, facing America's team. This Ben Johnson quote blew up. So I think we should address it real quick. Ben Johnson said, I think our practice habits are yet to reflect a championship caliber team. And when I first saw First Fake make a topic of this saying, have a problem with Ben Johnson saying that, I've rolled my eyes. And then I heard it in another place yesterday saying, is it too early for Ben Johnson to be calling out his team, basically their practice habits? I did not get that from this quote. I think our practice habits are yet to reflect a championship caliber team. What is wrong with that? How is that blown into a bigger topic unless I'm missing another two sentences that destroyed his squad?
Everything I heard was just literally that clip. It was just that clip. I don't see a big deal with this at all. Fans probably love hearing it.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Fans probably love hearing it.
And I don't. When I hear Johnson's delivery, he's stern. That's
stern.
The one thing I wonder is he a little bit too stern for the long run or starting off? But this quote in itself, I don't have a problem. Brian Schottenheimer basically said that about the Cowboys last week. Our practice didn't ramp up the way we wanted it to. We weren't practicing great leading into the Giant game. Why is this a topic?
I think tone is important. Like you said, it's something where, you know, Schottenheimer, they could say the same thing, and here's how it'll sound from the two of them. Schottenheimer can say, you know, I don't think our practice is where we want. Look, but guys, this is a process. Like, we're coming in here. We're trying to establish a certain culture. We're trying to do this. What that takes is time. Yeah, it takes time and consistency. You do different things. And with Ben Johnson, it could just be like, we suck. We're not champions right now. We suck. And that's there's just a different feel to it.
Here's the audio of it.
I think our practice habits are yet to reflect the championship caliber team.
A little stern.
It's very stern.
That eye hits you. Like, right, I think it hits you in the ear.
Now, the follow-up, I have it for context, right? We should be going to the football, finishing hard. We talk about it all the time with the offensive players, our fundamentals, our finishing, our technique. They need to show up in the walkthrough. They need to show up on the practice field. That's how it shows up on game day. Simple things. Do we properly block? How do we catch the ball? I mean, this sounds like a Belichick answer. Let me just list everything to where we need to improve. I have zero problem with
this. There's good play, there's bad play, and there's championship play. and he's trying to get to the championship level of play.
I'm trying to get to good play right now.
Yeah, he's trying to get to good play first. Walk before you can run. I have no problem with this. I mean, he comes from a Dan Campbell was a psycho. Ben Johnson sounds like a psycho. Like, that's you need to be
Aaron Glenn's a psycho.
Yes, you need to be a little psychotic to be great at certain things.
I agree. I think, again, though, the if you're just playing devil's advocate, you would have to look at it and say, if you're trying to establish trust, if you're trying to get to a certain point with your players, is that tone in week two? Like, it's like, dude, it's a little early. Can we get some time to find ourselves a bit? Like, yeah. You're still figuring this job out.
Like, look how Schottenheimer addressed the defense.
Right, yeah.
Zero panic. You know, I wish he would have actually been a little bit more panic, but is that going to improve things defensively with the guys in the room?
Yeah, and I know there are some players who, in the NFL, view any public admonishment like that as performative. Specifically, if the tone doesn't match. So a lot of people would feel like, we always have the question, does Schottenheimer have the fire to really hold guys accountable and do things like that? And behind, like, when he's in that practice space, he does. When he's up at the podium and he's talking to the public, it's a different tone. All right, so let's take a look at the Chicago Bears. Their injury situation, by the way, is really, really rough right now. They had 6 players who did not practice yesterday, 4 of them with hamstring injuries. So soft tissue is an issue for the Chicago Bears right now. The big concern right now for them is their cornerback situation. They've already lost Jalen Johnson. They've got other guys, Jalen Jones, who's hurt. Kyler Gordon, who I was a big fan of coming out of Washington a couple years ago, he's hurt. So they got 3 corners who didn't practice yesterday, and that's a secondary that's already not very good. And we'll get to that with the defense here in just a sec. Caleb Williams, that's the headline. That's going to be the thing that you are watching in this game and really curious to see how can this quarterback hurt us. The mobility, the things that he can do off platform, the way that he can improvise, it's all very impressive. And Dallas's issues with running lanes for the quarterback the first couple weeks, some of the issues with their communication, their ability to stay disciplined in their zones and different things like that, that does open up a threat where somebody like Caleb Williams, the way that he moves and the way he can do things, that's a problem if you let it be one.
Yeah, I know that they're all worried about it right now. Oh, he's not, you know, throwing on the third step. He's not 5-step drop, bam, out. I'm kind of terrified of Caleb Williams scrambling around playing street yard ball against this defense and secondary.
Yeah.
And I know Bears fans may be saying, no. I'm going to be yelling that in my living room.
Yeah, like that's most defenses you expect the longer you have to cover, the more likely it is that you're going to find somebody who's open. But I mean, most defenses would not expect just wide open, free running guys. And if Caleb Williams is able to just kind of roll out of the pocket, there's no telling how open somebody will be based on these first 2 weeks. They don't need him to be out of off platform, bailing from the play too early. We've talked about, you know, you mentioned earlier what Troy Aikman had to say about Ben Johnson. When you watch the tape, he's scheming stuff open for them. And so I was curious. I was like, man, this looks like a lot of really open guys that Caleb Williams is throwing to. And so I went and looked it up. They are 4th in the NFL right now in target separation. So their guys do get open. Oh, and they're able to, you know, it's a lot of the same Ben Johnson stuff that we've seen before. Different looks to try and marry run and pass. The, like, set up play action to be able to run out of those formations. The different things with deep crossers. They hit Roma Dunze for a big crosser just last week. And he's the biggest concern for me in this game, Roma Dunze, the second-year receiver from Washington. He is, I think he's going to be, by the beginning of next year, middle of next year, we're going to be saying he's, like, starting to push for top 5 receiver status.
Whoa.
Like, he is an absolute stud. Big, fast, physical.
And give his background?
Really good route. He was at Washington. He was one of those 3 receivers that they had there.
With Penix.
Yeah, with Penix. That was the national championship team. He was the stud of that group, though. That was somebody who NFL scouts would drool over him just because it was like the kind of, when you talk about the size that he has combined with the type of athleticism, the type of route runner that he is, all the different things he does there. And he has replaced DJ Moore as the guy.
Who's his comp? Who was the comp?
I'm trying to remember the one that they threw out to me because I remember it was a combo. It was two really, I had a scout throw out a combination to me and they had said it was like Drake London, who's big, with like some speedster guy, and I cannot remember who the other one was, but he's a very unique type of player. He's 6'3", 215, but really athletic and a really good technician at the position. He's going to make them hurt if they play like they did last week. He could, this is not an exaggeration. If they play coverage like they did last week, he could get 200 yards. Whoa. Like he's that type of just
underdog.
Freak. And Caleb Williams loves him. Caleb Williams is super comfortable with him. And DJ Moore is still there. DJ Moore is not a bad player. It's just that's the guy that Caleb Williams clearly has his affinity for right now. I do think Dallas is going to be able to rush the passer a little bit better. Braxton Jones at left tackle is a bad player. And I kind of liked him when he was coming out of school. He's not developed into the guy that you would want him to be. But he's somebody who consistently you see him, he gets hit in the chest. He has really bad balance issues. He'll get knocked off his platform. He ends up on the ground, I feel like, once every four or five plays. The pass protection stuff is just not very good. He has allowed a lot of pressure for Caleb Williams at this point, and one of the reasons why Caleb Williams kind of bails out of there as quickly as he does. I think they're a better run-blocking team than they are as a pass-protecting team. They're actually, it's interesting to look at. First off, as I was looking up these notes, I noticed this. Javonte Williams, number one in the NFC among running backs in yards after contact per carry this year. But they are second in the NFL in rush yards before contact per carry. The Bears are. They're dead last in the NFL after contact. So, I mean, you're talking about two polar opposites of, hey, there have been opportunities to create here. We need you to give us a little something. Their running backs are DeAndre Swift and Kyle Manungai, the rookie from Rutgers. Neither one of them are a huge threat to me. I think that they can open up space. But these guys, DeAndre Swift just does not see things quick enough for me. A lot of the criticism you hear about Miles Sanders, I think, is here with DeAndre Swift. And Kyle Manungai is a rookie who's really struggled in pass protection for them to this point, and that's why he's not getting an opportunity out there. But if you look at run stuff percentage, their run rate, different things like that, it adds up to an offense that cannot efficiently run the football, but will still randomly, because they clear space, they'll break off runs. So they have one of the worst run success percentages in the NFL, but they're third in the NFL in 10-yard runs because they get space and they clear space. And occasionally, as long as they're untouched, they're good. But the vision's not always there with him. On the defensive side of the ball.
Is that surprising for a vet? Or is you either have it or you don't?
Yeah, I think typically, I don't know that vision gets better or worse. I think typically, it's just either it's there and you can anticipate it, or you just don't see it quick enough. Watching this defense is like it's like watching the Cowboys in the secondary, where their communication is so bad, where you'll see something, and I understand they've got a lot of injuries. They're moving people in, moving people out, so I understand there's a little bit of adjustment period for them. But when you watch this secondary cover, I don't know why there's three people covering the same zone. Like, oh, we're all three going to the out route. It's like, no, one of you is not supposed to. And, oh, look, there goes somebody free running down the middle of the field. It looks very easy to confuse them with different route combinations, crossing patterns. If you were to throw, I'm guessing, a lot of option routes at them, they'd have problems. They seem to struggle with levels concepts. They are very...
Are they running the same Eberflus D?
It looks similar. They run cloud coverage similarly. They run different zone concepts about the same rate. They blitz about as often as Dallas does. So, I mean, a lot of it could be that it's carryover.
Dennis Allen, though.
I hate cloud coverage.
They are 29th in quarterback pressure percentage. They are 24th in blitz percentage. They are 26th in 10-yard runs allowed. They give up a lot in the pass and the run game. Just, it's not a very tough team, it doesn't look like, from a physical standpoint on that defensive side of the ball. What's and it doesn't look like a very aware team.
What's your issue with the cloud?
It's just very tough to get a good tan. You got cloud coverage.
I knew you were going to do that. Yeah. I knew that was coming.
It's like a waste of time.
No, I think the issue here, the thing you're going to have to worry about, the best player on their defense is Montez Sweat. If Montez Sweat is able to come in here and wreck things, then that's going to be a problem for what Dallas wants to do. Because if they can't block things up long enough to be able to stand up there and deliver against this coverage that is so consistently confused and the secondary that's so consistently confused, then they're not going to be able to have that advantage, and it's going to cause a lot of problems. You saw last week early in the game how frazzled the passing game was when Dak didn't feel like he had time, when they were trying to run those boots and then Abdul Carter was in his face, or Tyler Guyton wasn't blocking something up. So if Montez Sweat is able to wreck things, that can neutralize a lot of this. I would look to chip him a lot or throw extra help over there, because Tyler Guyton last week gave me a lot of concern for his ability to handle this. But we'll also be looking at the weather. The weather is a big thing in this game. Chicago forecast had it as 40% rain yesterday. That is now down to 25%, but it is going to be storming the day before. So field conditions are going to be a question. It may be a game where they have to run the ball a little bit.
Bobby Bell with a very thorough, well done film room breakdown of the Chicago Bears. Of course, we're going to have the 12 o'clock pregame on Sunday as Bobby will be in Chi-Town. Sleeping off that deep. Well, no, he got disinvited.
No, you got to tell me somewhere else to go. Somewhere else for Pequod's pizza.
Okay, Pequod's. Please try it. I can't get there myself, so I have to eat through Bobby.
Do I need to? I was talking to Kristen about this. She was like, "What if I send you with like a little ice pack and some Tupperware, and you could put it in that Sean and RJ Firehouse cooler thing?" She's like, "Then you could keep the pizza cold on the way home."
Well, you did it for me. I don't know how cold it was.
That was in a Ziploc bag that I stuffed in my backpack.
Yeah, I ate that hot, sweaty Angelo's. There is gold belly, but you'll pay a lot for that.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is time for the Coach's Show every Friday at 8:20 here on Sean and RJ, along with our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. And the star of that program is Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Hey, happy Friday, guys. How we doing?
Doing okay. How is your mom and how are your dogs?
Man, I tell you what, a lot going on. My mom goes into surgery here in about 40 minutes.
Wow.
And she's got to have surgery to repair the fracture. The dogs are doing well. The anti-snake venom, I think, has worked, and cost me quite a bit of money. But welcome to Texas.
What kind of snake was it? And are you going to get pet insurance now?
Well, we have four dogs, so I would say pet insurance would cost me more than the anti-venom cost me, so probably no. But they think it was a copperhead is what they think. And again, they're retrievers, so you know they're nosy and they're not the smartest dogs in the world, so therefore they probably thought it wanted to be friends, and next thing you know, we're rushing them off to the ER.
Yeah, I had this similar problem, Coach, at my new home out in the woods. Well, and I got a Tolo to build a snake fence. I ordered lion pee, everything I could, because I'm terrified of snakes. So I got a snake fence guy if you need one.
Okay, well, did it work? Does it work?
Yes.
Do you see snakes? Do
yes.
you have issues?
Nope, I have not had issues for a year. Tolo Joseph, I got this whole thing wrapped around the backyard, and maybe one rat snake, which is not poisonous. So if you need it, I got the hookup. If you tell me I have more good questions of Bobby today.
Okay, well, I guarantee you're going to have way more good questions than Bobby today. And I definitely want the number, but maybe not the lion's pee or whatever that was.
Hey, they're supposed to be scared of it. You
yeah,
know, it's a dominant.
That'll keep out coyotes and everything.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, Coach.
Perfect.
So, you know, when you've got a kicker like Brandon Aubrey, who's clearly such a weapon for you guys, do you ever have to check yourself and ask, like, okay, am I playing this situation too conservatively because of this comfort I have in my kicker?
Well, yeah, actually, I was just watching some game management stuff with Ryan Feeder, and you guys probably saw it because you guys are such football experts. But like the Indianapolis and Denver game came down to a situation just like that, where Indianapolis had the ball, they were down 2 points, and they had just crossed midfield, and the field goal line was like the 36 or something. Well, they ran the ball on first down, didn't make a yard, ran the ball on second. I think they made a yard or two. They ran the ball on third down, lost two, and they were a couple yards behind the field goal line. The kicker goes out, actually misses it, so the game should be over, but Denver gets called for leverage. So the answer is absolutely. There's a fine line. We don't want to live with Brandon Aubrey having to make 64 and 60-yard field goals. Can he do it? Of course he can, but I think we also certainly have the trust in Dak and the offensive unit to go get us as close as we need to be. But definitely a fine line, and you definitely can't be too conservative.
Coach, there is so much coverage and talk about Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. Your thoughts on Caleb coming out, what you see from him, and what is a Ben Johnson offense, as he was one of the hottest names this offseason that we've seen in a long time?
Well, the first thing that jumps out at me when you talk about Caleb is obviously the arm talent. The arm talent is unique. It's different. It's impressive. Can make all the throws, velocity, touch, arm angle change, you know, to change his arm slot to make all the different throws and to avoid defenders and throw through windows. That's the first thing. The second thing I would say that jumps off the film is the guy's ability to improvise and move and the athleticism. He can hurt you scrambling to run. He can hurt you scrambling to throw. And you can just see the talent. I mean, anytime you're the number one rated player in the country as a high school player, and then you go and you become the number one player in college football, generally there's a pretty good track that you're going to ultimately be a great NFL quarterback. And I think we all see that. And then with Ben, you know, Ben's the guy that does a great job challenging the defense. I mean, his use of personnel, his use of shifts and motions is a lot like ours. You know, he wants to move and use all the different, jet motions and stuff to make, you know, create eye violations for the defense. And he does a terrific job with that. But I also love his ability to, you know, be aggressive. But his play-action passing game is awesome. He does a great job marrying the runs and the passes, and they have a lot of weapons. And again, you know, I've been asked by kind of a lot of our beat writers this week about, you know, the 0-2 Bears. It's like, you know, this is a good damn football team we're getting ready to play. So Ben's got done a nice job, and again, they'll be ready to go, and it's going to be a challenge for us up in Chicago.
Coach, can you follow up? A lot of analysts are trying to dissect Caleb, and they're like, Ben Johnson wants you on time within the structure of the offense. And then you talk about someone's skill with the improvisation. How do you balance that, you know, versus I want the ball out on three, I want the ball out on five, versus kind of weighing the special talent of someone running around and making a play?
Yeah, I can see why people would want to have that conversation. First of all, here's what I'd say. The timing and the rhythm of a precision passing game, it takes time, guys. I mean, you know, Caleb's still a young player. He's what, three games into going into his third game of his second season, and he's going to get there. And you know, when you're playing and you're developing, you know, you kind of default, if you will, if it's not the perfect look or the clean look, to some of your strengths. And Caleb knows he's an incredible athlete, and he's got the arm talent to make all the throws. And I guarantee you Ben and his staff are working incredibly hard for him to get that timing down. I think he will get it down. I just hope it's not against us this weekend.
Brian Schottenheimer joining us here, 105 Through the Fan. So, you know, when you look at Ben, and you know, they ran a lot of trick plays with Detroit. And I know, I'm sure you plan for this every week, but do you have to plan extra special for a guy like Ben that you got to be more ready for a trick play coming your way?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say. I think you're always ready. I mean, you know, Ben's obviously got a little bit of a reputation as a gambler, as he should be. You know, was it Ben? Was it Dan? You know, a lot of times when the head coaches got the personality of a Dan Campbell on offense, you're going to carry a handful of more third down, fourth down plays because he's going to give you the green light to go for it. I think that's what we're still learning. I think a good thing for Ben is, you know, no one needs to know that yet. Like, you know, that usually takes a little bit of time to figure that out. But we're always trusting our rules. We're always prepared for anything. But the creative nature of what Ben does is, I think, why he was a fast riser as a coordinator. And again, the guy's just built great offenses. I remember him going to Detroit as, I think he was a tight end coach or something, and Anthony Lynn was a good friend of mine, was the coordinator, and, you know, things didn't work out. And then next thing you know, Dan moves on from A. Lynn, and, they're promoting this guy named, Ben Johnson. And I talked to a couple guys on the staff. Mark Brunell is the guy that, coached in Detroit and was a quarterback for us with the Jets, and he was raving about Ben. And then you look with the success that they had when they brought in Jared Goff, and the next thing you know, they're lighting up scoreboards.
Coach, I always wondered how teams plan for weather. It looks like it's going to rain. But, like, how far out are you checking weather reports? And then as you get closer to the game, like, is there, like a time where you're like, all right, we need to change up our game plan. It looks like it's going to be this bad. How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I mean, again, is it 1-0?
Right,
I don't even know what the score is right now. I mean, is it 1-0?
Yeah.
But no.
Hiss, coach, hiss.
Yeah.
Remember who you're supposed to be saying it to.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. Yeah. So with the weather, here's what we do. You know, you obviously track the weather throughout the week. Our equipment guys do a great job of staying in communication. It's Chicago. It's Philly. It's places like that. Guess what, guys? It's probably going to rain at some point. So we're not surprised by that. I don't go overboard, guys. I don't do like a full period of, okay, we got to do a team period, wet ball, stuff like that. When we stretch, we throw ball to all the skill players and the offensive linemen, everybody, because it's all about the ball. We make them all handle the ball. But today we'll do it with wet balls. And again, to me, that's enough. I mean, the league does a great job. They keep the ball, clean and dry to the best of their ability. And the biggest thing would be the field conditions. You know, if the field starts to get slippery and things like that, that's more of an issue than the rain itself. But I think we do work on it, but we don't go overboard.
Cowboys head coach Brian Schottenheimer joining us here on 105 Through the Fan. Coach, you mentioned in your opening press conference, you were talking about the concepts and what you wanted the offense to look like. And you mentioned tempo, marrying the run and pass looks, cut splits. How close right now is this offense to looking like the one you were thinking about and describing that day?
It's a work in progress. I think that's fair. I think we've done some good things. I think, there's things that we need to clean up. I'm really pleased with, what we've been doing in the red zone. Our ability to run the football down there has been great. Our ability to score and come away with touchdowns has been great. I think the situational football on third down has been really, really good for us. But it's always a work in progress. And again, you're constantly learning your players. You're constantly learning what your opponent does. You know, we have a philosophy and we have a menu of plays, and whether it's, I'm throwing out arbitrary numbers, but all right, we got 80 first and second down passes to choose from and 40 third down passes and 35 first second down runs. You know, we like to run the same concepts and mix them up and do different things. And so I think, I would say we're trending in the right direction. I don't think we're there yet, but I also think this is something that it takes quite a bit of time. And I think, early season September football is always unique because everybody's still kind of feeling each other out.
Coach, Brock Hoffman's going to be at center for you guys, and I know he plays with a real edge, a real intensity. That's a temperament that you guys are fans of. But how do you make sure he plays smart and doesn't get any penalties after the whistle while still encouraging him, like, hey, keep that edge, though?
It's conversations. I've talked to Brock about that. Like, hey, I do, guys. I love his intensity, man. He gets underneath the defenders. He gets in their heads, man. And he gets them angry and worked up. And that's just a gift that he has. But, again, we want to play to the edge, but don't go over the edge. And Brock is the perfect guy to do that. The one thing I'll say about Brock is he usually gets it stirred up, and then when they do something that is out of character maybe for them as a defense, he never retaliates. So that has to continue. And but again, the guys trust him. Dak trusts him. Again, he's going to give us everything he's got. And great competitor, man.
Coach, we've talked about the defense a lot this week. The fans have reacted to us about the defense, the secondary primarily, questioning whether or not the talent fits the scheme that's being played. The miscommunication back there. What's your take? What have you seen over the first 2 weeks with that?
Well, I would agree with the fans in some regard that our communication has not been good enough. I think that's real. I think we own that. I think we're working incredibly hard to, to get that resolved. You know, playing great team defense requires great communication, and playing great team defense requires all 11 guys being on the same page and doing things the right way. And we certainly did not do a good enough job last week. We certainly let too many guys get behind us. And those are things that have been addressed. And those are things that you coach through. And those are things that you hold people accountable for, starting with the coaches and the players and myself and all that. And we have to be better. I think we were better. If you look at the Philadelphia game, we were better, you know, and we communicated better. And that was in Philadelphia against a very, very talented group. And they're really the reason Jalen Hurts hurt us with his legs was there was nowhere to throw the damn football. I mean, A.J. Brown had, one catch, and Devontae had one or two catches. So, again, we did not play well enough on defense last week. We understand that. We own that. This is a new week. This is a new challenge. And that's why we get paid, is to point out the problems, make the corrections, but lean on the fact that the players are going to get it fixed, and whatever we emphasize, they usually do a great job of.
Coach, take us into the meeting that you guys have with the announce crews that happened. I mean, everybody's making a lot of the Tom Brady situation. Are we making too much of this, and whether or not it's a conflict of interest?
You know, I think everybody's got their own opinion. I talked to Tom yesterday and Kevin Burkhardt and Aaron Andrews and their producers and stuff. And, you know, I'm very open with all those guys. I mean, you know, there's no secrets in this business, guys. I mean, let's be honest. Pete Carroll and I know each other as well as anybody. Pete has three of my playbooks. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I know Pete. I know what Pete's saying to his team. Like, and the questions that Tom and those guys ask, it's to do a job. And so I have no problem with it. I think each person has their own opinion. And if there's people that feel like it's an advantage, then, you know, for Tom and the Raiders, then that's for them. But I know I'm always going to be very open with all the people that do it, because I'm a football junkie, man, and I love talking football with anybody. Hell, I love talking football with you guys on Friday mornings at 8:20. So I have no problem with Tom, and don't feel like it's a conflict of interest on my end.
Last one for you, Coach, a football junkie question. The Dallas Morning News compiled the top 100 Dallas Cowboys of all time. I know you've got an appreciation for the history here. Who's your number one Dallas Cowboy player of all time?
Wow, really? You're going to do that to me this morning right before I jump off? So the phone lines can blow up, huh?
That was Bobby.
Well, again, I think, you know, you have to go. You ask the question, so I can answer how I want. I'm going to go Roger Staubach, one. I'm going to go with an offensive guy. And then just because, again, just winning, you know, winning in Super Bowls and championships. But, damn, Bob Lilly's got to be right up there with me as well, because I love defense. I love the line of scrimmage, and there's so many great names. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, please that one out, guys. Sorry about that. That's y'all's fault. Hey, that's y'all's fault for asking that question. Yeah. There'll be more buzz about the curse word than there will be about the answer of Roger and Bob.
A little early for a shoddy already. Dang.
Coach, thank you for the radio gold.
I'm out of lemons.
Thanks, Coach. Awesome stuff. Best of luck on Sunday.
All right, thanks, guys. Always enjoy it.
Wow. Bringing the gold. Dang. Brian Schottenheimer, brought to you by Black Rifle Coffee Company, the official coffee of the Dallas Cowboys. We react to that, and are the Cowboys about to hand out another market-setting contract? Next, in B-Low, B-Belt, 105.3 The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. I told you he's ready to go right now. Brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. It is Dallas Cowboys owner and general manager Jerry Jones. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, guys.
Now, I was hoping that obviously you, not only when you've owned the Cowboys, but you're very familiar with the history of the Cowboys as well. I wanted to see if you could give us any thoughts about the former Cowboys linebacker, DeeDee Lewis, who obviously people credit with him saying Texas Stadium has a hole in the roof so God can watch his favorite team play.
Well, DeeDee was, of course, one of the, if you will, staples of what the Cowboys were about in the 70s. And, of course, I'm sitting right out front. I'm going in a service for Leroy Jordan. And that linebacking group were not only noteworthy for the Cowboys, but I remember Leroy was my hero. He played at Alabama. He made 37 tackles, I think, in one of the Sugar Bowl games. And he was a monster. And he was driven. And he was everything that football was about. And, of course, the Cowboys drafted him, and the rest is history. Bob Lilly said Leroy was so instrumental in his career because he would tap him about what he was doing, where he was going, direction he was going, and just the two were an unbelievable team. But Leroy Jordan was the first player. And I didn't blink. I hadn't been in town but maybe a couple of months, and I immediately put Leroy Jordan in the Hall of Fame. That was because of the great legacy that he had, not only at Alabama, but here with the Cowboys.
And I know you're getting ready for the game against the Bears this weekend, but then does that mean this is a particularly emotional day for you then?
Well, I'm just want to revere what Leroy was all about. And emotion is a really one of positiveness about he epitomized to me the spirit and what you look for that you can't see on the surface, and that's what's inside. And he brought that over to Cowboy fans, and there's a big part of the legacy the Cowboys have today. But I wouldn't say it's emotional. It's just a time to recognize just exactly what he meant to the team. And I'm sorry that he's gone and his family. He had a wonderful life after the Cowboys, but still, we do, as the Cowboys, we want to recognize his contribution, and it was big for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that makes sense to everybody listening right now. One of the things I love to pick your brain about is league issues as well. I know it's only two votes away from getting outlawed last year. How do you feel about the current incarnation of the tush push, and do you think this is the last year we're going to see it?
Well, it very easily could be, but as so often, I'm going to compare this to Michael Irvin, the Michael Irvin rule. Michael had a technique that would give him an instant separation from the D-back. And, of course, Aikman had the ball there when he separated, but he'd kind of punch him down on the hip. And that had that separation. Well, it was so effective, the league banned it. That's not uncommon. Did the same thing, but for safety reasons, when we had the horse collar tackle. And so my point about all of this is that they do that well because they've got a quarterback that is unique relative to his strength, and that makes that play go. Now, they've got it down to an art, but their point was others could have it down to an art. Too. When do we change rules because a team has gotten excellent at it? Well, we've done it before. There's a long history of changing rules because teams get excellent at it.
Jerry, on the topic of league issues, Tom Brady is now a minority owner of the Las Vegas Raiders, along with his role as an analyst for NFL on Fox. But some questions came up when he was spotted in the Raiders coaching box headset on in their game against the Chargers. With that access that he has to teams and their plans through the TV production meetings, do you see this as an issue going forward?
I'm not at all concerned about it. Not at all. When he came in, that was an overlying issue about having someone as prominent as he is in media. Just by the nature of what he does, he has to have a lot of knowledge about all the teams. Is that going to be a concern? I'll never forget my first year on the competition committee. You had guys like Marty Schottenheimer. You had guys like Don Shula. You had some of the good people that we think greats of the game as far as coaching is concerned on that competition committee. And they said, you know, Jerry, everybody in this league read your signals. And we knew when you were going to run. We knew when you were going to pass. And we actually, by the way, you tipped it off, knew which direction we were going to go. We still couldn't stop you. So much for having some of that intel that can cause you to really disrupt a game plan. I don't think too much of that as far as it being a competitive issue. I'm okay with Brady in the booth.
Sticking kind of in that broadcast theme, there was a report earlier this week that Amazon feels like they have a real chance at broadcasting a future Super Bowl. I know you have talked about access to football games for all of the people. What would you think about the idea of a Super Bowl on Amazon Prime?
Oh, I think that's I think that's possible. I think the key premise behind the NFL's television philosophy is as many people get to watch it free as possibly can. So that falls right in that category as far as I'm concerned. So I wouldn't dismiss those prospects at all. I'm specifically not saying any particular partner that we might have in the presentation of our games. I'm not doing that as to something might be interpreted that I know we are doing something with them for a particular Super Bowl. We're not. But as far as the future is concerned, I think it's very possible.
Jerry, pleasure to chat with you. You said last year that y'all might have gotten a little over your skis with the expectations to having Guyton and Beebe start along that offensive line. Are we worried that that might be the same case, expecting so much out of Savon Revelle when he comes back, considering that secondary is the way it is so far, and he's coming off the injury that he is?
Yeah, I think it's part of it to have your first pick, top pick like that, and of course Revelle would have been a top pick in my mind in the first round had he not had the injury during his senior season. But the whole point is that's what go with the first round and maybe even some in the second round. Our expectations are such that it presents, if you will, a story or a basis or a backdrop of a part of the job of coming in and being a first-round pick. Certainly, facts are that very seldom do you have somebody come in and play their first year as though they are will play or others have played in ensuing years. That learning how to do it in the offensive line is real.
Jerry Jones joining us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. You guys got the deal done with Jadeveon Clowney. Do you expect him to play a lot this Sunday? Is there a pitch count? What are we expecting from Clowney this Sunday?
Yeah, I think that's a little up in the air. They'll read that as they go, but I do expect him to play.
Now, speaking of people who expect to play, Kevontae Turpin, he said he expects to play yesterday. Does that sound right to you? And how effective has he been as an expanded offensive weapon this year?
Tremendous, tremendous. He's I'm so glad we got him. And he's always stepped up and been beyond anything you could have ever expected at anything he's doing. Obviously, the return game. But he's a big part of the problems that you give a defense, and he uses that speed, he uses that acceleration. But where he needed to evolve more is in the offense. He was such a key and perceived as such key return guy that he might not have had the emphasis that he would have had on the offensive side of the ball. And so now he's gotten in there. He's got a couple of years under his belt. He's really a big part of our team. I mean, a big part of how we're going to move the ball this year.
Now, on the return front, obviously a lot of things were done to kind of change the nature and exciting factor of the kickoff. Do you ever anticipate any kind of changes to, like, punt rules in terms of not being able to kick it out of bounds or anything like that?
I don't see that as much as I see tweaking, and I do see tweaking. Special teams is such a big part. I had the privilege, and I'll answer you through my eyes, but we won the national championship when I was in college. We won it because we were the best special teams team in the country. And we made an art of it. And we led the nation 2 years in a row at special teams when I played at Arkansas. And we won the national championship one of those years. But we used to practice our setting our wall up and not using our hands. We would do the practice with broomsticks. And we would put broomsticks behind our back and put our arms behind the broomstick so that when we ran, we would kind of wall off as opposed to using those hands. And we practiced on that. And we practiced the first 25 minutes of a two-hour practice. We would practice that long and hard on special teams and did it while we were the freshies at the start of practice. It's a point of emphasis.
Jerry, we've seen Mozzie and Jaden Blue as two healthy scratches the last 2 weeks. What's kind of the reasoning behind that? Now, we know from Tahir and Shoddy, Jaden's been a little bit inconsistent is what it sounds like. Obviously, Mozzie's situation goes without saying. Where are we at with these two going into week three?
Well, let me say this. I know where your question's going, specifically to them. But if you don't see them up there, then that means that there was somebody else up there for some reason, because we were iffy on the fifth guy or fourth guy about him finishing the game at some other position. Not necessarily because of direct competition, but when you see a player down or two players down, they're down because the best way for us to win the game in Brian's mind is to not have them up. And that's not a negative. That's not a punishment. That's just that when it gets right down to that point and you've got 10 minutes to kick off, you're going to put the people out there that give you that next 3 hours the best chance to win. That's how that happens.
Fair enough, and I get it with Jaden Blue being a fifth-round pick, but where are we at with Mozzie? I mean, this guy's a first-round pick, 2 years removed, defensive tackle being the, you know, I mean, look, you went out and got a defensive tackle. Where are we at in his maturation, and is the clock ticking on his Cowboy tenure?
Well, let me just say this. We've been bringing, we made that trade with America and brought in a key part of our defensive line and one that really strengthened us. And guess what? It was right in there where Mozzie plays, inside. And of course, we've just brought on another defensive lineman. So we are continually, just within the last two moves we've made in that defensive line, we're continually trying to get better there. That says it all, right there. The Mozzie's in his third year here. This is, by the way, Tom Landry used to say, don't get the final scorecard on any player until after they've been in this league 3 years. I've seen it happen too many times that somebody just comes on. Mozzie's got tremendous strength. He's got tremendous agility. We just need to get him to where it results in making plays, tackling, making the play, being involved at the point of attack, those kinds of things. And when you see him out there, I'm sure he's going to give it his all to be noticed.
Jerry, you're facing a first-year head coach in Ben Johnson with the Bears this week, and he's been praised for his offensive schemes, including some unique and creative play calling. You've experienced that when he was with Detroit. I wanted to know, as a fan of the game, do you like the unpredictable play calling and the creative schemes, or are you still a purist in the sense of keeping things simple?
Oh, by the way, I better be, but I am. I think one of the exciting things is that you really don't know what's coming. And that's really as it should be. You know what's crazy is that one of the great things about the game, I know this sounds trite, but if you look at it in a way, it certainly is strategies. There's no way. There's certainly the technique, the preparations, and all of that. But at the end of the day, when that ball is snapped, that's mass confusion. And everybody's got direction, and everybody wants to go, but it's directed in a certain way. I love the philosophy. When I think of play calling, I love the philosophy of trying to get two players on offense, on one player on defense, and the, between the two, be able to have yards out there, no matter if it's receivers, no matter what it is. And so I'm my coach, Frank Broyles, was a basic mathematics approach to the game, 2-on-3, 3-on-4, 4-on-3. Outnumber them in a spot. That's the strategy. Then the rest of it's up to those guys to keep their hands in, not hold, keep their, don't foul, and use everything you can to shield them away from the ball carrier or to lock them down.
You talked about how you could take the trade capital from the Micah Parsons trade here on these airwaves before and acquire a player with it rather than waiting to draft. Would you consider yourself open for business in the defensive trade market?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm open for business, period, relative now that we have those extra picks, and we should be. And we'll operate with them judiciously. When we traded Herschel Walker, I basically traded a couple for one of them for Alonzo Highsmith. And boy, what a great player. What a great person he is. But my doctor said he was through. It was bone on bone on his knee. Well, I still brought him in. Of course, he was through. He didn't play any because of that bone on bone. It couldn't be repaired. What it gave us was the opportunity to cut and shoot. And we did do some things that you wouldn't have done with the normal picks. That's how Charles Haley got here. I couldn't have done that if we'd been sitting there with regular picks. I did it because we had extra picks. I was able to trade them to San Francisco to get Haley. It was a risk. It was a real risk to bring in Charles Haley. But the rest is history. He helped us get those Super Bowls.
Hey, shout out to Cut and Shoot, Jerry. All right. You've got Ben Johnson. You got Brian Schottenheimer. You caught a lot of flack because people said, hey, he didn't bring in a Ben Johnson. He didn't bring in an Aaron Glenn. He didn't go out and get the name coordinator. We're two going into 3 weeks in, getting a lot of positive feedback from former players saying that, you know, Shotty has reinvigorated the culture. He's got a different mentality than we've seen from other Cowboy coaches in the past. What are your early returns and thoughts so far on Mr. Shotty?
Well, I'm proud of him, and he's basically bringing to the table everything that I felt you could put your finger on. Number one, for 30-something years, he's been in coaches' meetings at several different teams. He's got a doctor's degree on how to do it because he's been around it. And he understands the going and coming of all of the fads that go on and putting an offense together. Secondly, he has that kind of background. But guess what? He has the freshness of never having done it. This is my time. I'm going to get to show them. And, of course, I'm proud of my father, but this is a time for me to get to go do it. I love those dynamics. I love the foxhole about it. He passed early on a job that he could have had probably and been a head coach much earlier in his career. So I think we've got a seasoned coach, one that has been through a lot of battles. And I think we've got a seasoned coach that's never having done it. I agree now, head coach has got a lot more finger pointing towards you. But I sure like his fundamentals, and I like his approach too. He's got no other way to say it. He's got unique people skills, and he's engaging. And I think this will serve him well.
Well, we appreciate the time very much, good sir. Best of luck against Chicago, and we'll catch up with you again next Friday.
Good to be on with you. Thank you. Bye.
There you go, Jerry Jones right here on 105.3 The Fan. Now, one of my favorite moments of that interview is when you talked about Jaden Blue and Mozzie Smith. Yeah. And he goes, now I know where you're going with that question. And he was like, hey, Fred, I just want to give you a heads up. I know your follow-up question is about what a disappointment Mozzie Smith has been. And then you're like, I don't want to let you down, Jerry. No, How much of a disappointment has Mozzie Smith been? Oh,
but I thought I worded it. But honestly, the biggest disappointment I had was the fact that he did not recognize my cut-and-shoot shout-out.
He did not.
Okay, so I was expecting a snicker, maybe a ha-ha, how do you know about cut and shoot? But, you know, again, tying it in. I mean, how many people out there know about cut and shoot Texas? You ever been to cut and shoot Texas?
I have not.
I've been to cut and shoot. All right.
How'd it go?
Well, I mean, not long. Just drove right through.
What a captivating story that was, Fred. Thank you very much. Right now. Brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC.
Gotta leave a little meat on the bone.
Yeah, I could see why he didn't acknowledge what you said now. He saw where that was going. Brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. It's time for some baseball nuggets. Now, Jacob, if you could go ahead and give me cut number two, I would appreciate it because we got the official announcement last night of the upcoming retirement of an all-time great.
0-2 on the way to Josh Reddick. Kershaw drops down and freezes him with a knee-high fastball.
Now that is, in fact, Clayton Kershaw will finish his career with the Dodgers, somebody who had kind of dabbled with the possibility of coming to the Rangers just a couple times, three-time Cy Young Award winner. He won an MVP. If you look at his ERA and his whip, it is the lowest in the past, I think it is 50 years, for a starting pitcher. I mean, this feels like a crazy, iconic career that's coming to an end, and I know the last couple of years have been tough.
Yeah, I don't know if sentimental is the right word, but, yeah. You know, seeing some greatness step away from the game because, you know, we joke about it all the time. I'm only 24, so I haven't seen some of the all-time greats walk away in my lifetime. But, you know, even when Brady left, I don't really like Tom Brady. But, like, I knew that the greatest of all time was leaving the game, and that made me sad because I knew I wasn't going to see him on the field every Sunday. And for Kershaw, is he the same guy that he was in the Cy Young seasons? No. In the All-Star seasons? No. He's not who he used to be. He's not getting any younger, and now feels like the perfect time while he is still healthy. He's had a couple of issues health-wise here recently. He's healthy now. Go out while you're still able to go out on your own terms, and good for him.
Yeah, I'm good with it.
Okay.
You know, I mean, Kershaw's been, you know what, pretty nondescript the last few years. Anyway.
Wow.
It's going to be the same way when Justin Verlander retires.
Man, okay.
You know?
So we actually talked about that yesterday, and because Verlander said he's going to keep pitching. He was awful for the first half of the year.
Not great.
But in the last, like, six starts or whatever, he's been unbelievable. His ERA is sub one.
Kate probably cut him off.
That's actually...
Kate probably cut him off, okay? And look, there's a... You know, boxers abstain.
Yes.
Before big fights. Yes. All right? So maybe that's...
So
something to it.
I think you'll like this. This shows our night show heritage.
We
call it sex hostaging.
I love
And
it.
So yeah. You could see scenarios in which that would occur.
We've got a lot of listeners that go through that, but I don't think theirs is by choice.
Yeah.
So, you could say my name.
Well, usually hostaging is not by choice, but
that's fair.
That's a good point.
You know what? Now that you say that.
Okay, good.
Look, I'm still waking up, man.
No, I know.
I didn't go to the gym this morning.
Oh, I was just envisioning a scenario where you were like, I've taken
a hostage.
But it's by their choice.
No, I've never.
Okay.
Well, you know what? I was going to tell a story, but I'll hold off.
They thought
I was being held hostage. Swear to God. As a newspaper reporter.
Back really?
Yes. Yes.
What do you think you're worth ransom-wise?
Not much. Not much.
I'd probably chip in.
Look, a couple $100 maybe, max, and a tank of gas.
I'd help out with that. Blake doesn't have any money, so I'd probably have to help out.
Nah, Blake would come through. Now, the problem with Blake, though, is finding me.
He's true.
That would be the issue with Blake. And he doesn't answer his phone.
That's right.
So that's the other, and Alec knows this.
That's right.
So, like I said, I don't know. Like, lifeline-wise, if
okay.
I ain't going to be Blake.
Yeah.
Ain't going to be Blake.
I can see that.
You know?
Shout out to the A's. They beat the Red Sox last night. We talked about the combination of teams that you needed to lose if you hold out any hope. Look, I understand that it is not likely whatsoever. Yeah.
Slim's leaving town.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But if you're continuing to keep up hope, and look, there's only 9 days left in the season. Why the hell not? You did get a good win last night with the A's beating the Red Sox. I wanted to throw this out there. For the first time all season, the Dodgers are no longer the favorites to win the World Series. They have fallen behind the Phillies, who obviously won't win because they have Bryce Harper. And then the Brewers are third, the Blue Jays are fourth, and the Mariners are fifth.
I think it's the Phillies to lose, man.
Well,
they
I mean,
just look good.
They will.
They just look good. Now, I think every team breaks through. There's just something about that team, man. The way they looked when they came here to DFW, God, they look good.
So that's your World Series?
That's my way. Hey, look, take my 10-cent baseball prediction with a grain of salt. I mean, look, I've been getting lambasted at night because I said, look, this is 82-80 baseball team. I'm talking about the Rangers.
Well, I mean, they're on pace to be better than that now.
84 and what, 78?
Hey, I just said better, okay? I didn't say how much better, you jerk.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get caught up in that whatsoever.
That's it.
By the way, shout out again to Max Fried. He had a career-high 13 strikeouts versus the Orioles yesterday, although clearly I know the counterpoint to that is another team that you would like to see lose if you're looking for any different combination of ways to get the Rangers into the playoffs. They start their series against the Marlins tonight, last six home games of the regular season, and you can hear that right here on 105.3 The Fan. We're the KNC Masterpiece. We're live from Taco Bueno in Dallas, North Central Expressway. That is the enthusiasm I'm looking for. 79-40. We got giveaways with those Tolo trucker hats. They're also going to be giving away Cowboys Packers tickets if you want to come out and see us. Coming up next, we'll talk with Mickey Spagnola.
All right, Argyle, we have arrived here. It's hour number one of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan, and Argyle has rolled out the red carpet for us. We're here at Argyle Fine Wine and Spirits. It's their grand opening. They're going to have a ribbon cutting coming up in an hour, but this is the place to be. Already shook a lot of Tolo hands. Had a burger from Burger Man Catering out here. He's making free burgers for you. And we're at Argyle Station today, 8595 US 377, and we're in the first floor here, right in the corner at Argyle Fine Wine and Spirits, where we're going to be rocking and rolling for the next 4.5 hours with you. You can watch us on the webcam. Chief's just crushing a burger right now from Burger Man Catering. General at your service. If you see me, bear me. N.A., we have some fine selections here.
Walk right around the corner.
Just that. There's Broadus.
Hey.
The former Cowboy Scout, the Super Bowl champion. You have Ross Lebinski filling in for Lucius Alexander once again today. Send Lucius some love on social. Let him know that he is missed. Wolchuk and Chia following the house. Carter Freeman's coordinating your video. Ruben Portillo, remote engineering here with you live on the scene. So come say hi. Salute to the Sugar Mill. You know, these cookie boutiques are just booming. You got your Tibbs Treats, and you got your Crumble, and you got all these competitors popping up now. And Sugar Mill Cookie Company is as good as it gets, so shout out to them for bringing us by some cookies.
Unbelievable. These are they're big cookies. You want to see them, Brian? They're absolutely gorgeous.
See one?
They smell fantastic. Whichever one you want. We got like a snickerdoodle.
Yeah.
There's like an Oreo. We got chocolate chip. I think we've even got one with Fruity Pebbles. I know you love your Fruity Pebbles.
Yeah, Fruity Pebbles sugar cookie.
See what we got going here. Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's the good stuff right there. Okay. Big day out here for us. Come
big
say
day.
Hi.
Big day.
I don't know if we've ever done a show in Argyle, but this is like booming. You know, this is Chief's neck of the woods. I think Justin's just like 10 miles that way, right? We're pretty close to where you grew up.
Yes. Yeah. I'm 20 minutes from here.
Okay. Pretty much a home game for you then.
Pretty much a home game, absolutely. But I've never been to this spot here. Usually when I come down 407, get to 377, I bang a left because that's where all the party's at. Not anymore.
Yeah.
This is where it's at.
And I guess we got another beautiful high school football stadium that's being built right behind us.
Yeah.
And a field house. Grown.
Yeah. Like Denton Geyer is probably about 10 minutes down the road. I passed Geyer on the way here. And then C.H. Collins is pretty close here. So we got another football. I mean, Denton's booming. We got Braswell that's been built since I left UNT and was calling the Denton ISD Games of the Week. It's Argyle, everything's expanding, man.
Their sports are for real. I mean, football, baseball, whatever it is, softball, Argyle sports are serious.
Okay, the Krusty's Corner's coming up at 3:40. He's going to preview the Bears offense for us today, right?
Boom. Yep.
The terrifying thing is we hit midweek, and maybe I'm a little bit slow on the come up here. Maybe everybody's been thinking about this since the day he was traded. But I just wonder, is this personnel communications? Is this a new defensive coordinator? Or are we looking at the casualties of not having Micah Parsons, as good as Kenny Clark has been? The numbers said over the last 3 years with Micah off the field, whether he was injured or just taking a series off or a couple of plays off when he was tired, it became one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And damn it, through 2 weeks, that's what they are. One of the worst. Like, is this gonna be the case for the next 15 games? Is the defense this bad?
Yeah, it's weird because they looked really good after you got that weather delay against the Eagles. Like, all of a sudden, here it is. They're able to get stop. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a shock that you lose arguably one of the top three pass rushers in football. Now your pass rush is drastically poor. I do think that it is surprising in terms of how bad Sam Williams has been. Marshawn Nealand, I thought, looked really good in the opener. Didn't look good against the Giants.
That's true.
We expected Donovan Ezeraka to be better than what he's been after what he showed us in training camp.
Sure.
He's still a young player that's only played 2 games. So I'm not writing him off. I think that he should get better, hopefully, as the season goes on. The biggest disappointment's been Dante Fowler. That's a player that had 10 sacks on Washington last year that didn't have a Micah Parsons on the line. Dorrance Armstrong, we know very well,
yeah.
Okay player. But that was the other best pass rusher on that team, and he's able to get double-digit sacks. Fowler's given you absolutely nothing through 2 games.
Yeah, I feel like that folks, an apology, because we were talking about these edges. And we were talking about them in a way, and this is the question I have for you guys today, is that all of a sudden you say, did the Cowboys front office make a mistake in feeling like we got to fix the run defense and our edges are good enough to make up for Micah? Did they miss that? Was it something like it was so focused on run defense, but we have enough edges to make up for the pressures and the sacks? Maybe it's not the same player, but as a group, did they make a mistake in evaluation that their edges are better and could have made up for? They, like, you know, okay, we can move on from Micah.
Yeah.
But, hey, we could do this and we could get Kenny. He could help us with run defense. But, man, our edges will be fine. We'll be good. We'll be able to manufacture. Steven Jones talking about manufacturing pressure and all that. We've yet to see that.
No.
We've really yet to see that. And now there's a side of me, if I was sitting in that room with them, I would have said, you know what? Guys, I think we misevaluated our edges. I think we thought too much of them and what we sacrificed for run defense, thinking that we're going to have pressure and we're going to get sacks from these guys.
Yeah, it's possible Micah Parsons was just the ultimate one-man perfume for a defense, and now you just kind of break it down level to level and you're compromised at corner, your safeties are just okay, your linebackers are mid. And without a good pass rush,
yeah,
I don't know. It's got to be the perfect scheme. And they've come up with plays. You know, they came up with plays against Philadelphia. They came up with plays in overtime. You know,
they did.
Not only Williams, but Nealand as well.
Yeah.
Was there on the ball that Russell Wilson had to rip down.
Yeah,
ripped that thing down because Nealand suddenly flashed in front of him.
Right.
So I guess you made plays in the overtime. You can get confidence from that. But by and large, the 2 games, I mean, just looking at all the numbers, it's not good enough.
No. And we're seeing with Philadelphia, they are not a team that is really threatening you through 2 weeks at all passing the ball. So they just really want to run the ball and throw the ball like 5 yards down the field. Okay, it's easy to look decent against that. Mm-hmm. You just had the Giants offense put up a historical type game on your defense.
See, that's the problem that I have, because going into that game, you saw the pressure that the Commanders got on those tackles, on the center. You know, a lot of that game, John Michael Smits wasn't under duress.
No.
You know, I mean, it was. I felt like that, put Kenny Clark over him, kind of take some advantages, maybe rush through the middle of that. But, yeah, you really didn't do anything to affect. And I worry about the same thing when I start to talk about the Bears today. I'm going to talk about their offensive line.
Yeah.
And there's very similar things that you saw with the Giants. And now there's a side of me also that's saying, damn, does Dallas have enough pass rush to be able to take advantage of something that they should have last week? I'm seeing the same thing this week with the Bears. You know, is it going to be another game where all of a sudden Caleb Williams is sitting in the pocket and Rome Odunze and those guys are running down the field with you know, nobody really covering him, and he's comfortable throwing the football.
And I do think some of the sell job was we need to. They know they need to stop the run. They've known that for years. The sell job after you trade Micah Parsons is, okay, how can we put lipstick on a pig? Yeah. Kenny Clark's going to help us stop the run. That's the way they're trying to positively spin
it. But see, to me, they oversold the edges. And Brian Broaddus oversold the edges, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I admit it. I mean, I'm watching training camp practice. I'm watching Donovan Ezeraku. I'm watching maybe not so much Fowler, but you're kind of thinking about Sam Williams. You're thinking about, oh, wait, they've got some of these edges here. They'll be able to do it. They'll be able to kind of put some things together. It's going to be about pressures and sacks. And, oh, if this guy gets three and this guy gets four, you can kind of put it all together.
But I also don't think Micah Parsons was some magic elixir. Like, we saw the same problems early in the season last year, where they're historically getting beaten at home at AT&T Stadium. New Orleans is beating the doors off of them. Baltimore's coming in and doing whatever they want through three quarters against them. And it looks terrible.
Yeah, but New Orleans threw the ball 17 times in that game.
They had success, got running a huge the lead, and then ran the ball.
Yeah, I just, to me.
Raheed Shaheed have like an 80-yard touchdown in the first quarter of the game.
And I would say, to be fair on that, you're talking about the Ravens, and you're talking about at the time when the Saints were healthy and catching teams off guard with their new offense, they were actually legit. That just happened to you by the Giants,
yeah,
who scored 6 points versus a Commanders defense that nobody has respect for.
Yeah, I think the Saints were on a run of like three straight 40-burger games when you caught them.
Yeah, and then they sucked for the rest of the year. But those 3 weeks, they were really good.
They were.
But that's why we can't be prisoner of the moment here. I don't know what this defense is right now. You get Jadeveon Clowney. Does that help you? You didn't have Deron Bland. How long is he going to be out for? Eventually, you're going to get reinforcements
secondary. I will say we know one thing. This defensive coordinator will play. He'll play zone coverage. I mean, that's
all he wants to play.
That's the one thing that he's going to sit in that zone. And if you look at where, and we'll get into this thing with Caleb Williams, but there's some things that you can affect Caleb Williams, but it doesn't need to be too deep. It doesn't need to be with zone. And if we get in this game and all of a sudden you're seeing plays being made down the field and you're sitting there in too deep and all of a sudden guys are passing guys off and they're not, you know, covering guys, then this defensive coordinator is a stubborn coach right there that won't adjust. And I think he's going to have to do something different in this game. I don't think you could sit there and play Donovan Wilson in two deep coverage and expect not anything different, but the results you had last week.
More man, more blitzing. I think those are the two things that you got to start with. You cross your fingers that Clowney can be some level of a difference maker for you, but ultimately the trade with Micah Parsons was just a trading of problems. You weren't going to be able to stop the run with him on this team, but you were definitely going to be able to get after the passer. Now you can't really do that at all, but you're stopping the run at a high level. Unfortunately, if Russell Wilson in front of that offensive line can do what he just did to you, you have a world of nightmares to consider.
Dawson, here's the problem real quick, I think. You trade away Micah Parsons, who's your best pass rusher. You got an offense, obviously, that could put points up on the board. Teams aren't going to run the ball on you anymore.
That's a great point.
This is the problem. You now traded away your best piece to close games. When your offense is capable of putting up a lot of points, you're naturally going to make teams. When it happened in 14, 16?
They lived off turnovers.
Yeah,
this team's going to have to find a way to force
turnovers. These teams that put up a lot of points, these Cowboy offenses that put up a lot of points, teams aren't going to try and run the ball on you anymore. You have no way of closing a game without a Micah Parsons on the field unless Clowney becomes this pass rush guy. But you've taken the one, you going into the season, that's why I would have stood up, and we had this discussion when Micah Parsons was traded. I stood up and said, hey, what are we going to do here? We're gonna score points, but we're not going to have any way to close games without this guy.
Yeah.
That's the argument that I would have made for Micah Parsons.
Yeah.
I guess where did that get you three straight 12-win seasons when the offense was amongst top five in the league and when you went up against good teams and they ran the ball on you and your offense didn't perform?
Well, because the offense didn't perform.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying. If you've got
that's going to happen at times this year.
Sure.
So now they can stop the run, and you got to hope that your pass rush gets better. They got two young guys that they're going to rely on here in Ezeraku and Nealon.
This
team need to step up and get better as the season goes on. We're going into week three here, boys.
Yeah, it's fair to hope for those guys.
You just hope you don't waste Dak Prescott continually playing good games.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's the thing about it. I mean, he's 2-for-2.
Sure.
He's 2-for-2. on those games.
But it just goes to show how important it is that you can do both on defense. Like, not being able to stop the pass really ultimately was worth nothing against Green Bay or San Francisco in big moments. Yeah. And now, hey, we can stop the run, but now you're giving up chunk plays. I think it's fair to say it's only been two games. The players can adjust, the coaches can adjust, but ultimately the front office is going to have to make a move to get a pass rusher, because right now I think Clowney's going to be your best edge.
Well, this is where you go. This is where you go in if you're Jerry Jones and you tell Matt Eberflus, listen, you know, we just got Clowney here. We talked about this. We moved on from Micah Parsons. We got Kenny Clark. We all talked about that. We feel good. Right. Okay. Now you need to do your part, Matt. You need to do your part. If I have to see Donovan Wilson playing two deep safety or single high safety anymore and getting run by, or I see free access of routes of receivers running before anybody even collides with them at 8 yards down the field, we're going to change defensive coordinators here.
We are live at Argyle Fine Wine and Spirits. We did tease a roommate update. Broadus, and as good as that Cowboys conversation is, I want to pay off.
Nothing new, guys.
Radio silence.
Scared her off, huh?
We totally scared her off, I think. I think we totally. I'll be interested to see. Like I said, hey, I did my best. Tried not to, you know, like as the Ranger game was going on, tried not to do a lot of moving around last night. Sat on the couch, watched. Tried to walk real softly when I could. But, like, yeah, she didn't say a word to
me. I was interested to see if she was going to cower down.
No note on my car. No note on my car either. That could have been – that's kind of her M.O. is a note on the car now.
Oh, that's frustrating.
Oh, yeah. That's past me.
I didn't know if she was going to double down, lash out with even louder wall banging.
Hey, Bill, come over.
Yeah, that thing could go either way. She might go totally quiet in shame, not even making eye contact, or she could double down.
Yeah.
So,
well, hey, good for her. I mean, she's living through my, I guess, the floor walking. But if she's getting hers, good for her, man. That's what it's saying. Hey, good for her.
And good for us.
Hey, we got Anthony Chiafalo in the building, Eric's older brother. This might be the first time think we've seen Anthony at a remote. This is a legendary moment. The better-looking older brother, Anthony Chiafalo, far more successful on the gridiron, but just not as good when it comes to sports talk.
A double Chiafalo situation here.
Don't they look like twins? They're twinning.
He heard fine wine, spirits, and free cheeseburgers, and my man came running. All right, you just caught a glimpse of them there on the fan cam together. That's a lot of fun, and it's great to be out here. Please do come say hi. Again, our location, Argyle Fine Wine and Spirits, 8595 U.S. 377 here in Argyle. Frenchtown Salon Suites is upstairs. There's all kinds of hotties coming in, getting their hair and makeup done and getting their massages going on. I think they're going to have live music. It's a full-on deal here in Argyle, the Argyle Station, basically on the corner of Frenchtown and 377. We're coming back with the champ and Woolchuck's top 10. Where are you taking us, buddy?
Top 10 most insane high school football players who went on to become NFL stars in the great state of Texas. How many do we have in this top 10? That's next in the nation.
All right, it's time now for Stephen Jones here on your home of the Cowboys, 105.3 The Fan. And a good afternoon, Stephen. How the heck are you?
Good afternoon, guys. Good being on.
It's good to have you. We were just talking about things your dad, Jerry Jones, said this morning with our midday show, and he was asked if the draft picks you got from the Packers might be in play to make the team better immediately. How do you look at that?
Yeah, I think you're always open to any opportunity, whether you have extra or not. You know, if you see something that, you know, especially when you're talking about draft picks, it will make you long-term a better team. Which was part of what that trade was all about. The two number ones, and felt like Kenny Clark wasn't just a 1 year fix. Kenny's going to be here and be a top player for us, we think, for the next 3 years. So, anytime the right opportunity presents itself, then we're open to it. And I'm not privy to what he said. I don't think I heard his interview, but
he said absolutely.
I mean, yeah, I would be for it. And for looking at something that gave us a chance to not only make us a much better team this year, but make us better for the future.
I mean, you were within a score of Philadelphia. You had a great offensive performance in week two. The defense giving up 450 yards to Russell Wilson, I think, has been a big part of the reaction this week. How close do you guys think you are right now with this roster?
You know, I think it's a work in progress. You know, obviously you can't do that. Give up the yardage we gave up and the points we gave up and the big plays, the explosive plays. Everybody on the staff, our team, The organization's aware that you don't win many football games doing that. And we think we got one of the best in the business in Eberflus, and got all the confidence in the world. We're going to do the things that we got to do to shore that up. I do think there were some positives in terms of something that we've been focused on, which is stop the run. But at the end of the day, it's got to be an all-around performance. And, you know, we got to continue to run the ball and stop the run. But obviously, we can't be giving up 8 explosive plays in a game and giving up that type of yardage if we want to be the type of football team we expect to be.
Yeah, Steven, I kind of look at your team right now. Your offense is going to put opponents in a lot of bad situations where they're going to have to chase points. Is the pass defense something that's now more of a concern than run defense if opponents are having to throw against you?
Well, I think all the above, Brian. I mean, the run game, you definitely want to be able to do that. But I do think, you know, between philosophically and scheme-wise, we can do things that will continue to make us better. But I also have a big belief that we've got really good football players that are going to be coming back to help us, whether sure. that's Ron Bland, whether that's Revel, whether that's Diggs continuing to come off that injury and get better each week and understand what's expected of him. I think the pass rush can continue to get better. You know, we're not going to solve it overnight with one player, but getting Clowney in, I think, helps us. I think, you know, you got players like Easy, Dono, that are going to continue to get better as pass rushers. And, you know, just overall feel like, you know, we can do the things and move in a direction that our defense is only going to get better. And as you said, I think offensively, you know, we have some personnel and we have some things, you know, with a great quarterback like Dak that are going to stress the other team's defense as well. So this is a work in progress. By no means is anyone satisfied, a long ways from it. And we got a lot of work to do here.
What is the plan for Clowney on Sunday?
You know, right now it's going to be a game time decision. But, you know, there's we're seeing how he does. He did more today, but probably I know Jerry had mentioned he'd have a chance to play. But after practice and talking about it today, it's probably a final game time decision, but leaning toward him probably not playing this week.
Steven, it seems like James Houston has been one of the more efficient pass rushers on this defense. What's keeping him from maybe getting more snaps, more opportunities?
I just think it's, you know, everybody getting a feel for all the things that everybody does well. I agree with you. I think he's doing an outstanding job and has had some really good rushes. You know, I just think it's figuring out, you know, the right chemistry, the right groupings to play together. We want to keep people fresh. I think that's real important. And a pass rush is to make sure, you know, at the end of games when you need it the most, you can get the rushes you need to make the quarterback make quicker decisions and give the secondary some help. So I think all these things are really important, but hats off. 53 is doing a great job out there, and, you know, that's why we also added Clowney. You can't have enough of those guys, and you want to keep them rested.
With BB, the mid-ankle sprain there, a broken bone was also reported in his foot. Does that complicate or extend his recovery in any way?
No, I think it's still in the time frame we mentioned. I mean, it's that 6 to 8 week time frame. I usually bet on those offensive linemen. They're rough and tumble and don't want to miss, and he fits that mold exactly. So we'll see. But, no, that was we knew what we knew the full prognosis when we when the time frame was out that it was going to be 6 to 8 weeks.
How close do you think Trayvon Diggs is to the player that he was pre-injury?
You know, I think we'll see week to week. I know he's driven to do it. I think we've got a great staff over there, you know, working with him to get him in a great position to having the success that he's had in the past. And, you know, feel like it's all coming. Like you said, I think it's all in front of this secondary. I think Kyer Elam's going to continue to get better. So we've got a good group of men out there that are, I think are going to get better week in and week out and ultimately, you know, work ourselves into the team that we need to be.
Jerry was teasing some contract talk about Brandon Aubrey, the best darn kicker in football. Any update there, Steven?
No updates. As you know, I don't like to comment on them till they're done. I agree with Jerry. He's one of the best darn kickers in football, probably the best darn kicker in football. But, you know, we're lucky to have him. I mean, obviously, he played a tremendous role in that victory against the Giants. And he's a class act. As great as he is on the field, he's a better man off. And he's the type of guy we want to keep around here.
Are these officials going to get the tush, push, false starts proper this week?
I know we've talked about it internally as a committee, okay. And I know that's the ultimate goal. Our guys do a great job. Their job's never easy, but certainly we want to get it all right if we can.
Very nice, Stephen. Give him hell up there. We'll be pulling for you.
All right. Great being on, guys.
Yeah, great to have you. Stephen Jones here, brought to you by Ford, official vehicle of your Dallas Cowboys.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.